Hey, this is Eddie Pepitone. Welcome to Pep Talks with the Bitter Buddha. You're going to be hearing a great episode with Ron Lynch, but I want to plug first Chris Mancini and Graham Elwood's podcast, Comedy Film Nerds, with all things comedy. They are doing a documentary called Earbuds, a great documentary. If you like podcasts, you got to check this out. They are raising money through Kickstarter. The documentary is called Earbuds. It's a documentary on podcasts by podcasters. So please donate, if you can, to Comedy Film Nerds, and it is at kickstarter.com/project/comedyfilmnerds/earbuds, the podcasting documentary. So it's Comedy Film Nerds, Earbuds, the podcasting documentary. It's a Kickstarter campaign. The last day to donate is Monday, February 24th. So anyway, I wanted to plug that great podcast by Chris Mancini and Graham Elwood called Comedy Film Nerds, and they're doing a documentary, and please donate at kickstarter.com. All right, and now the Ron Lynch episode. Enjoy, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 8 of Pep Talks with the Bitter Buddha, Eddie Pepitone. And I am here today with a very special guest, a comedian who is, I don't know how to describe Ron Lynch, but Ron is a legend. Ron is a legend here in Los Angeles. He runs one of the most interesting out there comedy shows, alternative out there, all kinds of different acts, magicians, jugglers, knife throwers. Ron is – I always say this, that Ron is a guy who really – you know, when you look at Ron, when you see Ron perform – he's got this old Hollywood feel, like a timeless Hollywood, like Silent Star. And then the talkies came in and he got fucked. But please welcome my guest, Ron Lynch. Hi, Ron.
Do I say hello? Oh, hi.
Now, do you
hi, Eddie.
Hey.
It's a pleasure to be on number 8.
Yes, this is number 8 of my own podcast. And let me just ground myself in the reality. I was fighting with the Time Warner Cable Company before I got here. I was and this is the first time I've gotten to the studios, All Things Comedy, which is a great organization. And All Things Comedy, started by Bill Burr and Al Madrigal, of which this podcast is under the umbrella. And this is the first time at the studio. And I just got finished fighting with Time Warner on the phone. And I'm in that fighting mode, and I couldn't find the address. And I get very upset when I can't find an address.
Right. You drove around randomly.
Well, not only that, but Los Angeles, and I don't know if anybody – well, if you guys don't know L.A., but when you start getting downtown like Glendale, Eagle Rock, and then there's construction, I start feeling – I go through this panic that I'm never going to find my way back to quote-unquote civilization. And I had my –
like a main highway.
Or a main highway. You know, so I arrived here and I got in fighting mode. So I'm trying to calm down, basically. And you're a good calming guy. Now, I have never seen you get overtly angry. Like, do you ever deal? What gets you angry? Let me start with that. Yeah, and you've got that great laugh.
What actually gets me angry? I don't.
Do you get angry at stuff? Or are you one of these
not
guys?
Not really, and if I do, it's short-lived. I mean, if we're talking philosophy, I don't see much purpose to it.
Yeah, well, you're smarter than I am, because I think, you know, and it's killing me, the anger. I like being angry. Like, I get angry at, like, for instance, there's a couple of different things, like corporations, when I hear that Monsanto, let's say, is poisoning our food supply. And I'll be like, well, how come these motherfuckers can get away with that? I get really angry. What's your reaction?
Yeah, I get upset at stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I get really upset. I'm built like, what can I do about it? A little bit, you know?
Right.
Which is a bad philosophy, but I have other things to do. I have other ways that I help humanity.
See,
I think.
Yeah. Right. Like, you're comfortable. Like, I feel – now, this is me and you. We have a difference in this. Like, I feel that one of the jobs of the comedian is to fight for truth and justice, where I believe that you think it's just to entertain and make people laugh. And that's the job of the comedian, is to like let the burden, like Preston Sturges's, that great film, Sullivan's Travels.
Which I just saw recently.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Maybe we saw it both on TCM recently.
Yeah, it was on TCM, yeah.
Yeah, during the holidays. And basically he becomes he's like, I'm going to find out how the poor live, and I am going to make a movie, you know, describing, you know, all the injustices. And the people are like – and then he comes to the realization, look, I just want to make people laugh. You know, I don't know enough about real poverty and real deprivation and all that shit. But I feel like on stage I've got to be like talking about, you know, just exposing.
That's how your synapses work though too. Yeah. I mean, you're on stage, you're performing, and then you have a list of things in your head that you're kind of angry about.
Yeah.
And do you actually get angry on stage? You kind of do, right?
No, if I can – well, I always say –
it's a character, but
– it's a character. Well, yeah. The persona that I've developed is like – to me, it's like cartoonish rage.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I go up there and I'm like, oh, isn't it just great that we now have tomatoes that can explode in our fucking stomach because nobody tells Monsanto what to do. And behind that is genuine outrage. But, you know, to be funny, you can't be in a state of rage, or else I would be making Time Warner. You know, the people I was screaming at on the phone today, it would be funny if I was screaming at the Time Warner people and they were just laughing going, sir, can I tell you something? When you told me to go fuck myself, me and my coworkers, I have you on speaker now. Me and my coworkers just lost it.
Oh, yeah. You are so funny. No matter what you say is funny.
Yeah.
Do you ever talk that way at home, though? Do you ever yell in that form? No. You get angry
in a
more realistic way, right? Obviously.
Right, right. Like today, what really got me pissed off is I made some juice. I juiced carrots, celery, and all that stuff, which takes forever, right?
Yeah.
It takes forever.
It takes a lot of vegetables.
And it takes all these vegetables. And then I put it down on the counter and it fell. And not only so did I waste my time juicing, but it fell like – and the juice seeped under all kinds of bread and fucking – like it seeped under bread and like other things we had on the counter. And I'm just cleaning up. And here's my progress with anger lately. Instead of just like knocking shit all over the place and screaming, I take a breath and I go, I don't fucking believe this. And then I just start cleaning it up, and I'm just outraged about it. But I'm like, well,
what are you gonna do?
What can you fucking do? And I'll tell you what Ron Lynch does is Ron Lynch runs a show every Saturday at midnight called The Tomorrow Show. And Ron, you describe The Tomorrow Show. Can you? Because when people ask me to describe stuff I do, I always have trouble describing it, but you described it tomorrow.
I have a hard time.
You do too?
I think people just have to come to three different Saturday night shows.
Three.
I think three would do it.
Yeah.
Because you'll see that the show is kind of different each time. So it's kind of hard to describe. I mean, ideally, the show is a band playing for 15 minutes and then.
You have the band to open the show.
Assorted things. I have a band usually. I try to get bands to come in.
Right.
So.
And where do you – because I'm so musically inept, and I know you guys, you, Blaine Kapach, Craig Anton, Amit
– Right. Edelman.
Edelman have a band called the Tulsa Skull Swingers.
Right. But nobody knows we're in it because we wear disguises. So you just completely.
How would you describe the Skull Swingers? It's not really punk, but
I don't know. I asked those guys to give me a description because I don't.
Were they able
to
do it? I love it.
It's kind of garagey. It's like the Cramps. It's a little surf kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's surf music,
and it's fun. I mean, some of the songs are really playing musically, and then there's occasional songs where Craig is going off on a monologue in the middle of the song while we play underneath him. Yes. And then as the drummer, I come in whenever I think he should be cut off, you know.
Right. And just to give you some history with the Tomorrow Show, you started it with Brendan Small and Craig Anton.
Right. The three of us hosted it, right. It was after we were done with
Brendan, who created Home Movies, and what's the latest one? Metalocalypse.
Yeah.
Metalocalypse on Adult Swim. And Craig Anton, a great actor, had a recurring on Mad Men. Like, these are funny people.
Right. The father in Phil of the Future.
That's right. Craig is
talking. I'm only saying that because I don't think he's crazy. Anyway, yeah. So the three of us, it was very easy to fill time with the three of us because, you know, you're not having a dialogue. People would just occasionally start talking about something. And then the other two guys, you know, if one didn't have an answer, the other one did. So it's very easy and hard to host with three people.
But, because you don't want to step on each other. You don't want to step in each other when but you guys had this rhythm that was pretty
Brendan
cool.
That. No, I'm kidding.
And it's midnight. And then how long did they host it before you just now solo hosted?
I think 4 years or 3.5 years or three. The third – one of the anniversary shows, I think like the fourth anniversary, Brendan on stage said – by the way, this is my last show.
He never told you before that?
Didn't tell me before. A good friend of mine did not tell me ahead of time. And then Craig
– he wanted to tell you publicly. They say when you're giving people bad news to do it in public.
Go to a restaurant.
Yeah, like when you're firing somebody or if you're leaving a tri-hosting gig, just always say that in public. He should have took you to a restaurant because at least you would have got a meal out of it.
Yeah, right. It prevents you from hitting them, I guess. But I wouldn't hit anybody.
No, you don't hit people. You don't hit people. You just do offbeat comedy. You're like, wait, instead of hitting this guy, maybe I can.
I make people suffer with my comedy. That's what you're saying. We just Amit mentioned doing another show after we did The Idiots there, and we were the first show with the Steve Allen. Like
the Idiots helped
paint the theater black and everything. Yeah.
The Idiots, another great show that Ron and Craig Anton did about Crick and Watson,
the sons.
Oh, the sons.
Crick and Watson. That's why they're idiots.
The DNA guys.
People think they're smart, and then they're not. They were put together to discover something.
That should have at least been an animated fucking cartoon somewhere.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
An animated – Crick and Watson was perfect for some kind of Adult Swim thing. Big Bang Theory.
I have it in the back of my – oh, yeah. That's what it is. I have it in the back of my head that – and I know people from that show were at the show. And one of the guys, one of the creators
– From Big Bang?
From Big Bang. And one of the creators has been coming to the Tomorrow Show.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's a friend of Martin Olsen's, and I didn't know that. And when we did the Adventure Time book signing, he was there, and I met him. And then I realized he's been to the Tomorrow Show several times.
Wow.
But who knows? People, it doesn't matter anyway, in a way, because people get ideas from everything. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, your act is.
My act, I don't know what the fuck. You know. We'll talk about this a little bit, but, you know, I'm going to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year.
You are
trying to do it. You might do it this year. A very good possibility.
Yeah, I can do it. I can go. But it's expensive, and I got to get some money together.
It is expensive.
It's in August, right?
It's in August, so
– yeah, I can hope for the best.
You have a little time.
If I save $100 a day
– But why did I bring up the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
Because you're going, and I might go. And it was you've been there before.
You were talking about – this is what it was. Is you were talking about that people get ideas from all over.
Right.
And I want to talk to you a little bit about the creative process because last night I went and saw Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer is
totally
doing
jealous.
A show here in Los Angeles called One Word or Two, and it's about his love of literature and how literature got him out of being this shy, reclusive kid, and now he just revels in being able to act and just use words. And he did some Shakespeare monologue. Like, he just does this whole—
He's one of my favorite actors.
Is he? Well,
oh,
you got to go see it, man. It's downtown. Yeah, well,
I'd
we'll
like
see.
To.
We'll see. We'll see. But it's playing through, I think it's February 29th or something like that. But anyway, we saw Plummer, and as I was, I don't know about you, but when I go to the theater, I like stand up comedy. You do stand up, but you do more than stand up. You do performance art. Like, Ron does these great. I didn't even know how to describe your act, but like you, like the Hall of Presidents you do, how would you describe that bit? And then you do a lot of audio stuff. You do a lot of visual stuff. You are not a typical stand-up at all, but you're a solo performer.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
It's interesting.
And I mean,
I mean, you kind of, you combine performance art and stand-up. But you don't like go, hey, you're not a stand-up who's like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is up with peanuts? Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I don't think I've ever said that.
You know, I just read, like, you don't do stuff like this. Because I walk my dog in the park today, and these guys I walk the dog with are hilarious, and they always have little facts for me. They're like, hey, did you know I just heard on the news kale is not good for you. So that's a stand-up topic. Like, yeah. Hey, they just found out that kale is not good for you. Now, I was recently told it was a superfood. Okay, it was a superfood. Now it's not good for you. Now, can you tell me what the fuck is going on with kale? By the way, that's what I do, is I don't really have right. – I just go volume.
There goes my total kale diet, you know.
But you like to do conceptual stuff, like one of my favorite bits you do – is you keep a recorder in your pocket. How do you describe that? I can't even describe your stuff.
I don't know what that is. You mean the ventriloquist bit?
Yeah, it's where it says, don't put me away in the pocket. Like,
yeah, well, it's basically a ventriloquist bit, but the ventriloquist dummy is simply a tape recorder.
The ventriloquist dummy is a tape recorder.
Yeah.
People have to see you live. It's not easy to describe you on a podcast, but you're kind of like – And I think we've talked a little bit about him, but
I don't have a lot of jokes. I don't have a lot of
– Yeah, but you do. But the joke – your big joke is making fun of conventions, I think. Do you know what I mean? Like the ventriloquist is a tape recorder. The dummy is a tape
right.
recorder. I love the bit you do about Disney – the Disney Hall of Presidents, and it's like the history of stand-up comedy, and you act like a robot or an automaton.
It's wow, now I can't say it that you said that. It's animatronic.
Animatronic.
Animatronic, yeah.
You're an animatronic. Hello. Do a little bit. I know this is putting you on a spot, but do a little bit of the Hall of Presidents just so people get like a taste of your bit.
Wow.
Does it work on a podcast?
That would mean I have to memorize it. You see,
oh, you don't have to. Boy, you don't have that one memorized?
No, I've developed.
Well, give a little bit of it.
That I don't have to memorize. That's basically how my act has been developed. It's kind of true. It's kind of true. I mean, I've recorded a lot of bits.
That's all recorded. You don't know it? You couldn't do some of it now? That is
not really
hilarious.
I can't.
That is hilarious. But you're like
comedy, it's comedy in the future. And for some reason, it was part of originally it was part of a one-man show that I did once.
Right. Now, you're doing a one-man show now at the Steve Allen or Trepanny House, whatever
right.
they're calling it, which, by the way, in L.A., folks, is on Hollywood Boulevard. And
4773 Hollywood Boulevard.
4773 Hollywood near Alexandria, is it?
It's right at Berendo.
Berendo.
It's right across from the Barnstall yeah. Art Park.
It's originally called the Steve Allen Theater, and now it's Trepanny House?
The theater is still called Steve Allen
oh,
Theater,
okay.
but it became a nonprofit, so they
right.
needed an operating name that wasn't attached to the company that owns the Steve Allen Theater. That's basically it. Right. So it's called Trepanny House, and TrepannyHouse.org has all their shows.
Right. Go to TrepannyHouse.org to read about Ron Lynch's upcoming one-man show. So
it'll be the last Wednesday in February.
Right. And describe some of the bits so people get like a sense of you, because you're to me like a throwback guy, like Ernie Kovacs, like
love Ernie Kovacs.
You do love Ernie Kovacs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very hard to I remember in the early days of doing stand-up when I did a lot more talking and stuff, I worked on developing an act that nobody could steal. So it was also not easy for the audience to get because it wasn't standard, I guess.
Right.
And I think since I've been doing it so long, it makes me think that I just wanted to get away from that kind of stuff. And especially working the road and going to the middle of nowhere and performing, you – find that your stuff, which it works in a city, they don't want to listen to it, you know, whoever they are.
I would think your stuff that I've seen the last few years would work anywhere because, you know,
I think so now.
Right?
Yeah. But I do a magician.
Mesmerizer.
Two versions of it. If I'm doing like a stand-up set somewhere, I'll just do the magician using the jacket I'm wearing. But otherwise, there's a Amazing Ronaldo wears a big hat and just does a bunch of magic tricks that really don't go anywhere.
Magic tricks that don't go anywhere.
And some of them work, but they're all just mechanical magic things, you know.
That's what I mean, that you do stuff that pokes fun. Like that. Those magician characters are making fun of magicians. But it's also – but you don't, because you've played the Magic Castle out here and magicians love you. It's sort of an homage to them as well.
Yeah. But they also – there are magicians that, because I performed at the castle without doing real magic, seem like it is, I shouldn't be in there, you know, because I'm doing like a parody of what they do for real.
Do they get pissed at that? Magic Castle, by the way, out here in Hollywood is like a famous place that has the best magicians in the world come to it.
Yeah, and I was extremely fortunate and excited to perform there. And the only way I performed there is my friend John Carney, who's a big-time magician, invited me to perform on the show with him. And I helped write the show with the other magician. And it was really fun. But anyway, Monday night, they have a lot of magicians that come to see the shows, the new shows.
Oh, do they? The magicians come Monday to check out the new ones?
Yeah, because that's the light night.
Do you think they're coming? Because I want to get back to the thread of like how you develop new material. Because, again, I was watching the Christopher Plummer show. And the reason I brought that out is that I like to go to the theater to watch shows, because stand-up can be such a narrow little world. And when I go to the theater and watch – like someone like Christopher Plummer, a great actor, just talk about – I get ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I get ideas for my shows. And you had originally said, oh, well, the Big Bang guys are coming to your show. But who knows? People get ideas from everywhere. And I've been in a little bit of a rut creatively. Like, you know, I'm the screaming about injustice. And like I want to – first of all, Edinburgh is like 26 shows and 27 nights. And I don't want to scream as much this year. Because the year I did it 2 years ago, I basically thought I hurt my voice really bad. Like I was like, oh my God. You know when I knew I hurt my voice? My wife came, Karen, who wasn't my wife yet, but she came after I finished the run in Scotland. So we were touring around Scotland for a week. Uh-huh. And I was yelling at her and nothing was coming out. We got into a fight. We got into an argument in the car because I get crazy in the car. Just like coming here, I got lost. Well, in Scotland, they have these goddamn fucking roundabouts you drive through. And there's four
the other directions.
There's four fucking exits on a roundabout and there's cars coming at you from every angle. You're on the opposite side driving, blah, 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 blah. And I just lose my shit. And I went to scream. I said, because she was like, okay, you just get off at the second. You get off at the second exit on the roundabout. And I wanted to go, second exit on the roundabout? How am I supposed to know where that is? Instead, I went, second exit. And I was like, oh, my God, I hurt my voice. You know,
that's
I really
did. They're crazy. And they're not that big.
The roundabouts?
Yeah. And they're not
You've
that
done
big.
Them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I drove around Scotland with Kevin Kataoka.
Another good comedian.
And the first thing we got to was a roundabout, and it's like it's so against our training.
We go to the right. Totally.
I drove into a small Scotland town, like cobblestones and stuff.
Yeah.
And a car came straight at me, and I swerved to the right, and he swerved to the left. So we headed straight for each other and stopped like within a foot of each other.
Oh, my God. And yeah. You were driving, huh?
I was driving, and I kind of waved, and I went, I'm an American.
Right.
The guy started laughing.
By the way, I was doing things like just luckily I took out the insurance on the rental. I was doing things like popping off people's mirrors. Like I would go too close to park cars.
Yeah.
I'd pop off a mirror, keep going. You know what I mean? Like I was thinking there were wanted posters of me, like, you know, exhausted comedian driving through Scotland.
Yes.
We drove from Edinburgh to the Isle of Skye, which was quite a drive.
Yeah.
And stopped at Inverness, and it was beautiful. But there were times where I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, because you're on the opposite side of the road and you're on the opposite side of the car. So there are just times when you have brain freeze.
Yeah, but it's fun.
It is fun, yeah.
But that was August, right? So you didn't see snow. But we were
beautiful.
And there was snow like occasionally in places.
In May?
Yeah, we just drove. And it was northern Scotland.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of castles and just drove around. It was great.
Yeah, we stopped at five castles. But anyway,
back to creativity.
I'm trying to, like, you know, the creative process of like how do you get new ideas? Like just brand new fucking ideas, you know?
I am kind of mad at myself in the sense that when I started when I was at Largo, when I first moved here, and I was treated well, and I was there a lot.
Largo's a great theater out here.
I'm talking about the original Largo, which was a smaller bar. I would make myself do something new every time I went up. And because of that, it was fun, and some stuff didn't go, but I was, you know, really
– You would make yourself.
It was a different work ethic, you know. And now I feel like I have so much stuff, I stopped. So this one-man show is kind of a way of not retiring, but making me burn these bits in a way, you know? I won't want to do them a lot.
Right. Now, your first time in Edinburgh, though, which will be this year, God willing, you could do a best of. That's what I did for my first year in Edinburgh.
Right.
But now I've got to come up with a completely
new show.
Completely new show. But you could do a best of, which is great.
But they love political. Or just ranting. Don't they love ranting? Not that that's exactly.
You know
what
I found out that they love is they love just seeing authentic Americans. Like that they love. Like if I were trying to pander to, you know, what I thought was the UK sensibility, then they'd be like, no, we want to see you. They love like an unhinged, like they think of Americans, and I was a perfect, you know, foil for that, like as just, you know, loud. You know, aggressive. So, you know what I mean? So it was perfect.
Yeah.
It was perfect for me. So I should keep that. But, you know, another thing that I realized performing, I don't know if you have gotten this, but I'm going to kind of answer my own question about where do I get new stuff from. But when I perform on stage, when I'm in the moment on stage and I'm just with the audience and you're kind of a very improvisational, riffy guy too. Even though you have your bits, I know that you're like me in the sense that you just love to play with the moment and play with the audience. And I realize that as I'm talking on stage, I come up with ideas on stage all the time.
Right.
That I can't come up with being off stage and going
at a desk and writing stuff.
At a desk. Or even like it's so funny because different comedians or different creative people will be like, No, don't write at home. Go to a coffee shop or, you know, or take your book with you and go write by a river.
Well, that's kind of true too, though. I mean, getting away from your environment is definitely better. Creativity.
Yeah, but I think for performers, for live performers anyway, maybe not just writers, but for live performers, the biggest impetus to coming up with new stuff is being on stage, and you just kind of there's nothing like.
Well, the audience too. I mean, the audience is helping you write that bit. I mean, when a lot of times I would just go to the stage with an idea. And hope for the best, kind of, you know. I might involve a prop or, in my case, a tape recorder or something that is the – God, there's a word for it. It's the focus of the bit or it's the thing that starts it. It's the spark of igniting the bit.
And, you know, it takes courage to do that because, first of all, I don't know about you. I don't know about you because, you, like I said, you're not as – I don't think you're as nuts as me. Like I – do you need the audience to laugh? Like that's a typical comedian. Like if my audience, whatever audience I'm in front of, if they're not – if I feel like they're not laughing big time with me, then I freak out a little and – I tend to not do stuff. I tend to experiment less and try to go
right.
to
– You don't want to take a chance. You go to something that you know will work, and then when that doesn't work, you know it's not your fault.
You know what? Yeah. You know, like they say that you really learn from bombing, but I don't want that knowledge anymore. Like I've bombed – you know, I've bombed – You know, I've bombed, that experience, you know, it's supposed to be like if you get through that, like that wipes out a lot of people. A lot of people who start in stand-up comedy, they have beginner's luck. Let's say, like they get on stage, they really get a lot of laughs, but as soon as they bomb, that immediately thins the herd because they're like, oh shit, fuck this,
right.
Screw this.
Right. It's the opposite of the first time you do it and you get laughs and you're totally
they're
hooked.
Like – they're lost. You're like the people who aren't real comedians, they immediately like – you know, because there's a lot of –
But there's all types though. I mean there's also people who start doing comedy and they keep at it and they shouldn't be keeping at it.
You know? That's true.
That's from the perspective though of another person who does what they do in a way, you know.
Yeah.
In their mind, it's just a hobby. And they love hanging out with comics, but they'll still go to the shows
and take up stage time
and not change what they're doing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But that's not an artist. Like the real comedians are always like trying to figure out what the hell. For me, what it's been is – this is what it's been for me as a stand-up. It's like what do I want to say to people because I find it bizarre. Have you ever had this moment before a show where you look out at the audience and you're like, holy shit, why are these people here to see me? No, I've actually – I used to have this thought a lot more than I do now. But I used to be like, what do I have to say to these people – that they're waiting to hear me. I'm no better than any, like this is, you know, it's like I always battle demons, but this kind of demon, this demon is the demon that goes to me, Eddie, you don't, you know, you're not better than anybody and people are funny in general. Why are you funnier? You know what I mean? Like, what do I have to say?
I don't have to explain it to you though. I don't have to explain the fact that they like you in particular, some people. Some people are just in a comedy club. It depends on where you are. But if they come to see you, they like what you do, you know?
Right, but I always –
Don't screw up though.
But I always have that moment where I'm like doubtful about what I do. Like what am
I – Oh, yeah. Well, what about these moments where you're on stage performing and suddenly your mouth is moving but your head is going, what am I doing?
Oh,
who am I?
I've described
here,
that a little bit.
Actors get that all the time too. I mean, when I was just doing acting, at school and stuff, you would go.
Where'd you go to school, by the way?
Well, I went to school in Potsdam, New York, for 2 years, which is the top of New York State, because I was going to go to the Crane School of Music. I auditioned, I got.
Oh, you're going
to
do music?
Yeah, that lasted for.
You're a drummer, right?
Yeah, percussionist at this point.
What does that mean?
Well, that means you play a variety of instruments that are struck. All the drums. A piano is actually.
Does your card say percussionist at this point?
No.
Okay.
No.
That would be funny if it did.
No, it doesn't. But that's a good thing. I should have that on there. But I can't really read music anymore. I mean, I used to be able to read percussion music, which is one of the hardest. It's like 8 bars, you know, the different instruments.
You can't read it anymore? Why don't you just get reading glasses? Is it because of – You see, folks, it's not all an exploration of seriousness.
Yeah.
By the way, a lot of people just heard that reading glass joke, and they were like, thank God.
Yeah, they finally said something that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm not worrying about being funny on my podcast anymore.
Yeah, after a week of music school, I went, I don't want to do this. I thought I was just going to play drums and then dropped out of that completely.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
After a week?
After a week.
Less than a week. Why?
I actually had a realization that I was doing what I was doing, and I was like, no, this is not, I'm not obsessed with music, which is what the, you know, if you go to a music school, it was one of the top four music schools in the country.
But you must have really liked music. But you realized you wanted to perform more? Was that
when you're going to high school, you don't really know.
Totally
not. You think, well, if I can audition at a music school.
By the way, I don't really believe that anyone knows what the fuck they want to do in high school. Like the people who go to college and they're like, I'm going to be a lawyer. I think they're just doing what their parents want or what they think. You know, it's
kind
like –
kind of.
I think it's very rare.
I feel bad for those people a lot of times. I mean, if people follow what they think they should be doing –
yeah.
That's
I rebelled against that. Yeah. My dad was like, you should, you know, you got to be in a profession. You know, he didn't want me to be in the arts. He was like a typical blue collar parent. He was like,
don't take a chance.
That's take a chance. It's such a whimsical business, you know, like it's so hard to make a living in, blah, blah, blah. Be a doctor. So I started being – I was in the dental program at Fordham University, and I lasted exactly 6 months. And my dad gave me a molar chair for my – like. You know, for my room in college.
A molar chair?
It's a beautiful.
It's shaped like a molar?
Yeah, it was bicuspid 38.
It's that way. If you've ever heard a chair for molars for.
You mean a chair you just put molars in? Molars around the house? No. It's a bicuspid 38. If you know, all your teeth are numbered.
Numbered, right.
Yeah, and 38? This was a bicuspid. Yeah.
38. I thought there's only 32 teeth.
You caught me.
Sorry.
But I don't think people know what the fuck they want to do. You know what I mean? So you went into music and you said, I want to be a performer?
No. Then
what happened?
Then I wanted to be a scientist, which was geology, which I have a degree in.
You do have a geology degree?
I have a BA in geology, which is a Bachelor of Arts in a science, which is makes no sense.
It doesn't.
It's useless. I could work in the oil industry if I wanted to.
You could?
Yeah. But
you should apply to Shell just to get the money to go to Edinburgh.
Not a bad idea. Yes, it is.
Hi, Exxon, Ron Lynch. How many? Anyway.
I could do some fracking.
Fracking.
Oh, boy.
I would rail against
that. I don't know.
My friend Ron Lynch is polluting our water.
Oh, it's horrible. Have you seen that documentary? Let's get back to creativity.
Yeah. I haven't seen that documentary.
So if... Christopher Plummer did comedy.
You know what's funny too is that this guy's a legend. I just want to talk about that Christopher Plummer show I saw a little bit, and it's funny how judgmental I am, about a guy like Christopher Plummer, who's a great actor, and he was doing some Shakespeare monologues last night. Like he peppers the show with just different little pieces. And they were amazing. But the comedy stuff, if I have a critique of it, he would – as a comedian, when you see anybody who's not a comedian, putting little laugh lines in their show, I'm always going, I give that a 3. You know what I mean? I give that a 6. Yes, Christopher, that was almost funny. There was maybe a couple of lines that really – made me laugh, but the other was sort of like I would describe it as charming theater stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like not real belly laughs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He's still entertaining though.
Yeah.
That's the point too, right?
Yeah, and I was also amazed. I think you tell me, but I think Christopher Plummer is like 80 years old.
I was just going to say that. He's 80 years old.
And if I can be that's 25 years away for me at this point. So in 25 years, if I can be as great as Christopher Plummer was, then I'll be doing pretty good, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to picture Eddie Pepitone at 80.
I don't think it's going to happen.
At the Amundsen Theater.
No, I wouldn't have a voice anymore. Like from all the yelling, I wouldn't have a voice anymore. It would be – maybe I'd have to use
– Your problem is you yell in the back of your throat. You don't project your voice.
People are telling me that I have to learn where to yell from. And I think it's so like wired in me where I yell from, which is from hate, that
Yeah. No, I don't know. They
say yell from behind your nose. Dana Gould has told me, yell from behind your nose. It's weird. Like, or other
that's
people
too are too tight in my book. I think that's even too tight.
Or they say yell from your diaphragm.
Right. I went to when I switched to acting or doing theater probably in my third year, in which I was going for 2 degrees at the same time. My last geology class was a pain in the neck, man. It was like so hard. Anyway,
why did you have to? Did you actually have to like?
I had to complete one class to get my degree, and that class was like the hardest. It was mineralogy, and you had to slice up rocks and look at the infraction of the light that would go through the thing and decide where the mineral was and how when it was created and everything.
Yeah. It's just pretty artists crazy. Are not that scientific. Like once it gets to a certain, even though I love science shows, I love to know how things work. I love to know how things work.
Yeah.
Because I yearn for like understanding. Like I am so confused. Like I just go through the day. So you know what science holds out this carrot that you can understand your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bullshit because, you know, for me anyway, it's like I'm driven by so many irrational thoughts that science, like I love watching science shows or reading science because it like holds out this carrot of like, no. It's all very simple to understand. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And plus having a scientific understanding and watching something about science, you feel smarter.
Yeah, oh, and that's true too. And that is true too. Right? That's a good point that it taps into my ego. Whenever I'm watching a science show, like I was watching one yesterday about – I always like to watch the big shows about – this one was about – it was called Catastrophic Events, and it was just about how comets have come and hit the Earth and changed.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow. Okay, so they've changed like the face of the Earth,
sure.
and it's responsible for like the great flood myths, and there's always a part
asteroids.
Asteroids.
That was the show, right?
Yeah. I don't know what it was, but I always whenever I'm watching it, I'm going, the motherfuckers that I know do not know what I now know because
exactly.
I am watching this science show.
Right.
And it's such an ego thing. It's like the next time I go to a party – and some motherfucker, it's so funny that I'm cursing, it's some motherfucker brings up catastrophic comet changes. They're going to get an earful from me. And I'll tell you, most people, all they fucking care about is what Beyonce's last song was. Meanwhile, I'm at the forefront of scientific knowledge with Neil deGrasse talking about, you know, the universe and all
yeah.
that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it is funny that a guy – that's a funny character, isn't it? The guy who's like, I watch science shows.
There you go. You're not yelling. That's good.
I know.
Do the opposite of yelling.
This is how I should do Edinburgh this year. I want science shows.
Everybody coming will be expecting you to yell. The whole show, you're just really quiet.
Hey, you fucking yell a little bit. You quiet fuck. That's my imitation of Scotland. You quiet fuck.
Oh, I thought that was another guy from America.
But we've been going all over the place. But I feel like I don't know. So the threads are Christopher Plummer. Where do you get new ideas from? You were talking about going to school and switching your majors, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the thing of, you know, auditioning for a play, getting in a play, and then just getting that itch, you know, being in and in Potsdam, New York, which was 30 below several days of the year.
Is that near Buffalo?
All the way at the top of New York State. Buffalo's in the
Western.
Curve.
Right.
Like to the west.
Right.
But this is at the top.
Were you bordering Canada there?
Yes. That's one reason I went there. Anyway, that's another story. So actually, I hitchhiked to Canada once from school, had like 4 days off. And my future comedy partner and I wound up seeing a hole in the fence, walked into the hole in the fence and started crossing this bridge. And we looked behind us and saw that we were past customs.
Hold it. You found a way to get into Canada without going through customs?
Exactly. And it was just a hole in the fence. But I don't know. It wouldn't
matter.
Boy,
that sounds very lax.
Right?
On Canada's part.
I mean, we wound up walking back because we didn't know what kind of trouble we would get in or anything.
Who is the comedy partner? Do I know him?
Bob Lamont. No, no.
I didn't know him.
You wouldn't know him. Bob and I, we were partners.
Lamont and Lynch? Lynch and Lamont?
Bob and Ron.
Bob and Ron.
And because of that, a lot of our reviews would say
Bob and Ray.
Similar to Bob and Ray.
Did radio. You like Bob and Ray? Because again, you're like a throwback comic to me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I love, like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love them. Yeah.
I love funny. The. Maybe me and you, because I like to do this. I've done it with a couple of my guests. Just improvise a scene, a radio scene. And let's do one right now. And I'll start it. And you do whatever character.
I didn't think there was this kind of pressure. I thought I was just
whatever
talking.
Character you come up with. And it'll be like a Bob and Ray style, like an old radio type show. And they always did characters. So let's let's do it now. Now, I've done this a couple of times, and it's been horrible so far on the podcast.
Oh, okay. So I have
just,
nothing to lose.
You have nothing to fear because they've been terrible, you know.
Great. Okay.
But maybe this one will be good. So this is an old-time radio show. Let's say – when did Bob and Ray do their stuff? About
1960s.
Was it 60s?
Yeah, 60s, early 70s. I mean, they went through the 70s too.
Okay. And we'll just start. We'll just start. This is an old-time radio show. This is Ron and Ed, the Ron and Eddie show, okay?
Hello. This is Eddie Pepitone. I'm calling to get a verification.
Yes, I see that you called earlier, too. You've been calling us every day for at least 3 weeks every day about this.
Well, that's because the service I'm getting – hold on. I've got a dog here.
Okay.
Now, I just want you to know that I can make anything appear in my house.
That's fascinating, Mr. Pepitone, and
I want a verification. Hold on. I have a pussycat that's bothered. Hold on. I've got to feed my cat.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right.
No, that's not a cat. It's a cop car. It's a cop car.
Okay, Mr. Pepitone.
Yes,
really,
I just
really
need a verification
like you,
code.
You indeed are making these noises.
You got me.
And what do you want to verify?
I want to verify my cable box because I was told that I need to call you people up to get a verification code to make sure my cable box is working.
Okay.
By the way, do you like any kind of tatars? Like tatars for fish? Like fish tatar?
Wait, you mean serving like a beef tatar to fish? What are you saying? There's no such thing as fish tatar. Is there?
Well, hold up a little bit. I thought you're the verification code people.
I am. What is the number on the front of your box, sir?
1-7-3-5-2-9-8-5-4-7-GT-1-7-4. 5-3-2-5-6-3-L. L is in Lake, V is in Veronica, R is in Ron.
All right. I stopped writing, sir.
Why?
Well, it should only be a 5-digit number, sir.
Oh, well, here's the 5-digit number. Okay. I see it. Now I see it. 5-2-7-8-1.
Oh, okay, sir.
By the way, I just want to step out of character for a second and say it would be a boring improv group if they were just – like this to me was a mathematical – like this a mathematical mm-hmm. improv group. Like, ladies and gentlemen, we are the geometric figures and we need 5 numbers. And then someone in the audience is like 5-2-7-1-9. 5-2-7-1-9. No, that's 4. It's 5-2-7-1-9. 5-2-7-1-9. Thank you very much, sir.
So you left the bit in order to do a different bit?
Yeah, let's get back to that bit. So those are the 5 numbers.
You were doing a voice before.
Those are the 5 numbers.
Okay. Wow, this is very high school-y. It certainly is.
By the way,
the way we're doing.
By the way,
sketch,
the way you just came out of that and say this is very high school-y is the 2 other guests I've done with it did the exact same thing where they came out of it and said, "This is so bad."
Here's why I said that because people are listening to this and they heard us like the breathing of our laughing that you could hear in the microphones, And that, if when I'm listening to that and someone's doing a sketch and then they're laughing at themselves, it's almost worse than a live sketch where you start laughing at it. Because
look,
that could be fun.
I want to start bringing back people laughing at their own sketches in microphones.
Great. That could be one of the things of your show. Okay, so I got your number. I mean, okay, so it's five.
Yeah, let's finish up this sketch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you want to verify that this box...
By the way, the name of the improv group that I've come up with is called Genius on Demand.
Hmm.
God.
Hmm.
God. Genius on Demand.
Wow. Oh.
Me
you
and
just
Adam,
have G-O-D as the name of the
and
group?
And it's Genius on Demand because they're very arrogant. Me and Adam Felberg came up with this. We were like, Genius on Demand. Like, what could be the opposite of what improv people really feel? Because I think most improv people... are like, oh my God, I can't believe, I hope this goes well. But it would be funny if there was a really arrogant improv group called Genius on Demand.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's get back to the sketch. Folks, thank you for following all of this. We're now at where I've just given Ron five numbers for a verification code.
So Ron is my character as well.
You see, you don't need to be doing that. You got the five numbers. Okay, sir, so it's 51729.
Okay, so we can verify that is one of our boxes.
Thank you. Honey, hold on. Honey, it is one of our boxes. Don't you start, Al.
Okay, what?
I think that number is not an actual number for the box.
Oh, I'm sorry. The hold secretary.
Wait a minute. That sounded a lot like my wife. Honey, are you here?
Yes, Al. Where the hell would I be?
I'm really sorry. It's my secretary. She just...
I'm not your secretary. I'm Eddie's wife.
Now, this is why... Now, by the way, you are mixing realities on me, and this is why I'm calling to get a verification
code. Wait, are we out of
the
sketch again?
No.
Oh.
I'm calling to... You see that? I'm out of the sketch. That was such a subtle...
Bob and Ray would never do this.
Yeah, let's do a Bob and Ray type. That was a great sketch, but let's do – you start a Bob and Ray type sketch,
once
and I'll just follow you.
Once the box gets verified, that sketch is over.
Hello. This is a Bob and Ray.
By the way, just so if people are listening and still listening to this
well, – there's still a couple
if you
people.
Want a transcript of the show, it includes that script – And the comments will be in parentheses so you know what the actual sketch was. Please send us a self-stamped envelope.
Bob and Ray, they do characters sort of like, hello, Mr. Twiddlewinker, I'd like to interview you. Sir, are you indeed stuck in a well? I'm looking down at a hole and are you in this well?
Yes, I'm stuck in this well.
Now, the thing I want to say about you being stuck in this well is that you are taking it so well. No pun intended there. But
none,
your
none
voice.
Taken.
Your voice sounds so even keeled to be a man stuck in a well. How long have you been in this well, sir?
Well, looking.
Well, did you say well? Now tell me, is that part of the well culture that once you're stuck in a well, you start using that term a lot?
No.
That word,
no,
it's not a term.
Not at all. I've been in the well for approximately 5 weeks now.
5 weeks in a well. Ladies and gentlemen, you have an exclusive here. I'm Herman Tiddlewinker. Sir, what is your name?
My name is Frank Finkelstein.
Now, Mr. Finkelstein, I noticed it took you a while to come up with your name. Is that because of the lack of oxygen in the well?
It's a little bit about my ribs being crushed as I'm here. That's why.
Now, sir, we are here to deliver food, not to bum rush you about your ribs being crushed. We feel bad about that, but we are dropping food down to you. Do you see the food coming down to you, sir? They're short ribs and candy bars, Mars candy bars.
Yes, I'm only 1 foot away from the opening of the well, so yes, I'm quite aware.
Hold it. Are you that close?
Yes, you
to
can see
the
me.
Well.
I'm waving at you right now. That's me.
That's you.
Yes.
I thought that was a varmint of some sort.
No, no, that is me. And please.
Sir, we have your wife here. She'd like to say a few words to you. Frank, it's Tina. Mm-hmm. I just want you to know that you're very loved, and your son can't understand why, if you're 1 foot away from the opening of the well, that you can't get out. That's all I wanted to say. You're loved, and your son can't understand why you can't get out of the well.
Okay.
Sir, it's Herman Tittlewinker again. What do you say to your wife who just, I don't know, that's, I guess one part of the news was great that you're loved. The other part, not so great, that your son is doubting your.
Well, part of me being in the well is actually getting the free food and the attention that I crave. I think I probably could get out of this well if somebody would just throw me a rope. It hasn't happened yet. That's the only reason I'm still here.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Finkelstein has just told us this whole well episode is an attention grab. Is that correct, Frank?
Well, not completely. I mean, I get some food and.
Frank, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you going to Edinburgh this year? By the way, just to step out of the sketch for a second.
Of course.
How funny would this be is if this was your Edinburgh show? Because they have whacked out shows there, mm-hmm. like just silly ass shows, and which is why I think you do great there too.
I would like to get away from that sketch. It's
is it uncomfortable to do?
It's very Bob and Ray, but it's also very kind of slow.
It was too slow.
Which is funny because one of their bits is called The Slow Talkers of America. Did you ever see that bit?
What's it called?
The Slow Talkers of America.
No, no, no.
All right. It's basically you ask me who I am and what do I do.
Sir, who are you and what do you do?
I'm the president. And you already know, so you try to get me to complete.
Yes, yes. You're president of the metal worker.
No, it's Slow Talkers. I'm the president of the Slow Talkers of America.
Oh, okay.
And that's the end of that. So we can get that joke.
Anyway, thank you, Ron, for participating in the Pepitone Improv Group, Genius on Demand. I thought this one went.
I don't
better.
Want to join the group. I'm going to tell you.
No,
that
no,
right
no,
now.
No. I, no. Yeah. I just like to get guests to do sketches off the cuff.
Sure.
Do you want to add anything else about what's going on, or we're reaching the end of our interview?
Oh God, I'm so happy you said. I'm so happy you said interview.
We got your one man show coming up.
Yes, and I had the date, but I forgot it already. It's the
third Wednesday, 26th of February, it looks like.
Did I say third? It is the third Wednesday.
Yeah, you said third.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
If but not, if you go to trepanyhouse.org.
Trepanyhouse.org. Ron, thank you so much for being on Pep Talks with the Bitter Buddha.
And come by the tomorrow show and say hi.
I am. I'm going to.
Not
I'm
you.
Gonna, oh, no.
I'm to people that we're talking to.
All right, everybody. That was Ron Lynch.
I had a good time. I mean, I
did you?
I know you're trying to close the show up, but I, just, I had a good time. And if anyone needs me to do a podcast, let me know. I'll do the exact same thing I just did.
And by the way, can people hear the? Also, you have a great deep voice. Do you do voiceovers?
I do voiceovers.
Voice? Yes, I do. Voice
dangling. Well, that's kind of how I make my money, and I am quite available. I have good. 7 voices that I can do.
All right.
Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers, right. Yeah, I've done a few of those. Pep Talks, The Bitter Buddha, Ron Lynch, the guest. We'll be seeing you. Well, that was... Ron Lynch, episode number 8, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Eddie Pepitone. Please follow me at Eddie Pepitone on Twitter, eddiepepitone.com. And please follow the umbrella company for this podcast, started by Bill Burr and Al Madrigal, All Things Comedy. You can follow them at All Things Comedy on Twitter and allthingscomedy.com. Again, I'll be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest February 7th through the 9th, and I'll be at Largo in L.A. February 11th as part of the All Things Comedy show. And that's it. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and see you next time on Pep Talks.